Today, oh my goodness, what an episode. So I had the pleasure of having a conversation with Dr. Julie Hammond, and Julie has portfolio career to an extreme. That's how I would describe it. But what a great conversation. I want to go on my fingers like this. I really do. All the different roles that Julie has and why. So taking a step back for a moment. So Julie is a GP and she'll tell you more about that. But what really came out in this conversation is how Julie's painful experience of a stillbirth really galvanized and drove her to want to drive change for others. And she coins the term, she uses a term that I have heard before, but I think it really unpacks what drives her and why. She said, you know, it's not about continuing to admire the problem. And I think that really hits the nail on the head about what drives us in bravery in the boardroom as well. We know what the issue is. We want to see more representation at senior level across boardrooms. And particularly, we talk a lot to colleagues in healthcare, but we are admiring the problem if we just keep talking about the numbers. We know the numbers. And in Julie's experience, we also know about the statistics around Black women in maternal healthcare and, you know, how much more likely they are to have a terrible experience and that needing to change. So we already know that. What are we doing about it and what can we do about it? And you really hear in speaking with Julie how she is the change. You know, we say be the change. Julie is the change. And she's really unpacked for us how she's used what she's got in her lockup to step forward, to reach out, to build a network and to really understand the roles that, as she said, allows her to influence the change. I don't think I want to say any more. I think I just want to encourage you to listen to this episode. And if you want to understand more about what you can do using what you have to really be the change, then I think Julie gives such practical advice and insights. Can't thank her enough for the time that she spent with us today. Hi, Julie. It's so good to have you here. It's really good to do this episode. I've been waiting for a while for this. So welcome to Bravery in the Boardroom.
Thank you.
I know a little bit more about you, but mm-hmm. It'd be great for our audience to know who you are and tell them a bit about your current roles. And I say roles in plural.
Yeah. So hi, my name is Dr. Julie. I'm a GP based in Kent and also do some extra locum or contracting shifts in London as well. I fully qualified as a GP in September 2022. But in addition to my GP work, I also do a lot of work in health equity, maternal health, women's health and mental health. So in terms of how I express my interest in these roles, I'm a trustee for West Kent Mind. I'm also very passionate about like diversity as well. So I'm a member of the EDI advisory group for the BMA. Mm-hmm. I'm also events director for Black Female Doctors. I am a steering group member for the London Inspire programme. I also have roles within the Kent and Medway local maternity and neonatal service in my local area as well, in terms of my interest. And I think I do a few other things. So yes, I'm also NHS clinical entrepreneur as well. And I have some other roles, but I can't remember all of them at the moment. So it might just come out as we're talking. Yeah.
Did you say that you're an aesthetics?
Oh, yes, aesthetics. Yes. So I've been doing aesthetics since 2018. I've examined for my clinic in 2018. I work over three sites in the Kent area. So I have a clinic in Bluewater and then also in Chatham, where I used to live before, and also in Strood as well.
So my goodness me, I think I've run out of fingers in terms of it, but I definitely know that our audience would love to know more about your portfolio career. So I'll be digging into that a little bit more. But before we go there, I always ask a question to our guests about your leadership style. So how would you describe your leadership style in three words?
Okay, so I would say that I'm quite empathetic in terms of I like to know what's driving people, what the motivations for doing the role is, how they want to be acknowledged in terms of the work that they're doing as well. So whether they like for people to like cheer them on or if they do things, if they want public recognition as well. I think it's very important to know what drives people. And I just feel like when you work with people, you're meeting their needs. They give you their best and also their happiest. And I, again, being an empath, I would call myself, I'm very receptive to the environment which I'm working in. So if there's any sort of toxic or animosity in the environment, I can definitely feel it. So I'm definitely all about making sure that the people I work with, the team I'm working with, are all happy. I also say that I'm quite adaptive as well. Things never go to plan. So you have to always be ready to maybe cancel things at the last minute or work a bit later than the planned or do a bit extra than what you thought you might have to do. And then also I like to say that I'm a visionary as well in terms of I always have lots of ideas in my head, probably too many, as you can see all the roles I'm doing, because I have so many ideas and things I wanted to do. But I think you need to have vision in order to make these things happen, even if they all come to fruition, even if a handful of them do. It's just great to actually see the product come to life. So that's how I describe my leadership style.
So I think people listening would love to work for you because it's what you said there about with recognition, isn't it? Recognizing and valuing what people bring. And I think an important bit of a gem there that you shared about finding out what people want, because sometimes we might be thinking we've got good intention, right? With, I want to recognise you in this way, but actually, how do you know that that's what someone wants?
Exactly. So I think even in terms of me working in teams and how I felt appreciated or unappreciated, I think just having recognition for me is probably my main thing in terms of what drives me, in terms of being given a lot to the team. You just want to feel like someone appreciates what you're doing as well, even more so than the money or whatever else you've been given. So that's one of the things I find drives me. So I'm always passionate about finding out what's driving other people as well.
So what drives you? That's the key question. Okay. So, as I said, portfolio career covering so many different things. It would be really good to understand a bit more about that. So let me ask you first about challenges that you experienced along the way.
So I would say, first of all, I was a GP trained in terms of how I got into aesthetic. That's probably what I've been doing the longest in terms of my portfolio career. So as a trainee doctor, I found that I was working overtime. Essentially, I was trying to pay for a wedding. Weddings are expensive. At the time, a wedding was about 40K. Obscene amount. I know we're a bit crazy to spend that much, but I was in that state of mind at the time. And also, we just bought a house as well, so we needed to get a deposit. A house was empty. We needed furniture. So I was working lots in terms of overtime. I was doing 7 days a week. I was really tired and fatigued. I wasn't liking my job. I wasn't a nice person to be around, probably for my husband as well. So I thought, you know what, there must be a better way to make money in terms of time as well, in terms of time I'm invested in, and also, you know, what I'm getting out of it in terms of financial repayments as well. So that's why I started to explore other options. And then I came across aesthetics and I thought, you know, I love skincare. You know, I'm impartial to a bit of Botox and fillers, but I do say so myself. So I started to explore that as well. And then, so I went to go and do the course. It was a very short course, so it didn't really equip me the skills to really start my business, but I did try and start. I got a mentor as well. And then from there, I slowly started to build up my client base. And I found that in terms of my clients, the main way I've got referrals is people referring me to their friends, their sisters, their mums. And then that's why I've just continued on doing it, because now it's just something that just naturally flows in for me. That's happening organically. And then in terms of the challenges, so I was happy doing that for, you know, 2 years, I guess, until we got to the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And then the pandemic really just affected me in terms of working in A&E as a junior doctor. I was seeing how disproportionately people from Black and ethnic minority backgrounds were being affected.
Yeah.
And even in myself as well, we all know about the statistics in terms of like mothers being, or Black mothers being 5 times more likely, or now 4 times more likely to have complications as a result of childbirth. And then I was a victim of that during the pandemic. So for me, all the statistics just came to life. And I just found that I wasn't just happy just like going along making money. I felt like I needed to do more. I needed to also give my son's life meaning and also legacy, bring passion or purpose to my pain, I should say. So then that's why I started to really explore what else can I do as a GP. I wanted to be in a room where I wasn't just shouting and admiring the problems or just telling my story continuously, because it is a traumatic story. I don't want to just keep on talking about it. I wanted to be in a room where I can actually influence change, and rooms where my voice actually matters and we can actually bring things to the forefront. Because as a GP, I did try and, you know, say, oh yeah, I'm here, I want to create this. But again, you're very much at the hands or the, I don't know what the word is at the moment, but very much at the discretion of the people on top who are making the decisions. If they have got the money, they'll give you some money. And even so, you get the money for 1 year, it might not be there the next year. So I thought I wanted to take some control in terms of being in the rooms, making those decisions happen. And also I wanted to create things where I'm not dependent on the NHS or local governments giving money, where I'm actually raising funds privately for it. So that's part of the reasons why I got into what I'm doing at the moment.
Wow. I'm really heard what you said there. Like, I do think your career is amazing, you know, like, and I really do, because some people would just get their heads down, isn't it? Or some people just moan about, I loved how you described it, admiring the problem.
Yeah.
And some people do, good, bad, indifferent, just admire the problem. And it's not saying that raising awareness isn't important, but what I heard from you there is how it fueled you differently in terms of what can you do.
Yeah, because I found it was just traumatic just listening to the statistics, and I was just like, okay, this happened to me, you know, I need to do something about it. I need to either make sure people are not, don't experience what I've experienced, or also raise awareness in terms of this is happening to Black mothers. And also, and I think in our communities, don't really talk about these issues when it does happen. It's something that you just go through alone. So it's quite a lonely experience, I found. And I just want to raise awareness about what's going on, and also not just raise awareness, but actually make change. I don't like to just discuss the problems. That frustrates me quite a bit. I like to actually make some change. So if you're going to discuss a problem, okay, what's the solutions? What are the action points from this issue? So that's what I've really just been motivating in terms of continuing in this space.
And hearing you taking that, not just about, like you said, the you are taking that, well, what can we do about it? But also what I heard you say there is you recognise that some of the spaces that you were operating in, even as a clinician, felt that your voice wasn't always heard. Yeah. Or if it is heard, the funding challenges mean that it's not sustainable to try and drive the change or build the services that you want.
Yeah.
So you're coming at this from a different perspective, thinking about venture capital and how that can be. And so tell me a little bit more about that element of it. So what is it you're working on, and what's your vision for that?
So I'm really new in this space. So I'm still learning. Probably, so something like that might be like, okay, you're still very naive in terms of what you're talking about.
But you're here.
I'm here. Yeah. So in terms of the NHS Clinical Entrepreneurship Programme, when I first applied to join that programme, I applied with the innovation of maternity care champions or advocates. So these are going to be independent advocates who are medically trained, who are meant to be the intermediary body between the patient and the healthcare professional.
Okay.
So they're meant to advocate for the patient, make sure they're getting the information they need, making sure they understand the information that they've been given, and making sure that they're getting the care in a timely manner. However, there's lack of funding for these sorts of services. So then I sort of pivoted. So I'm still very passionate about health literacy. So what I want to do now is create a health literacy app, all based around maternity care. So that's what I'm currently trying to do at the moment. Obviously, I put some of my own investment into that venture, and then now I'm looking to raise funding for it. So I'm trying to create proof of concept. So once I got the app or something up and running, I can actually show people this is what I'm trying to create, and this is what I hope you can fund. So that's the stage I'm at now.
So it sounds so exciting.
Yeah.
If I'm a listener and I'm thinking, okay, like I feel like I've got passion for a particular area, whether that's through what you lived experience, like what fortunately you experienced, or whether there's something else that's driving me, what's helped you to progress? So heard that about your painful experience and translating that and that galvanizing you.
Yeah.
Has there been anything else that's helped you to progress with where you are now?
I would say, because first of all, when I first started, I was like, I have all these ideas and things I want to do. So I just started reaching out to people. I reached out to Kent and Medway ICB. I reached out to people on LinkedIn. I think me joining LinkedIn, I only joined last year.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. So I'm relatively new. Yeah, I'm a newbie to LinkedIn. And then on LinkedIn, I was just really surprised by just the amount of things that other clinicians were doing. I was really impressed and inspired by it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people working within the space, I was like, you're incredible. I just sent them a message. Some people ignored me, which is fine. But some people did actually respond back to me and actually like, you know what? Because again, you don't really appreciate the skills that you have.
Yeah.
So people are like, you're a GP. I would love to have you on board this project. So, and then from there, just collaborating with people, getting your name out there. And then people just start saying, oh yeah, Julie might know something in this space, or she might be helpful in some way. So from that, it's just been like networking definitely via like things like LinkedIn, and then even getting onto things like the London Aspire program. I think it was by my networks. That's how I got introduced to the program. Otherwise, there's so many opportunities out there, but it's all about awareness and knowing about these opportunities. Otherwise, you won't apply for it. So, and I learned about lots of opportunities, even in terms of funding that I'm applying for now through my networks. Because again, I was like, where do I even begin looking for this? It's just by talking to somebody who's like, oh yeah, I know someone else. And then from there, that's how things have blossomed.
So, see, this is so insightful, because I know when we say, reach out for a conversation.
Yeah.
What's the worst that can happen? Yeah. You literally went, yeah, some people say no, and that's fine.
Yeah, well, they even say no, just ignore me. But it's okay.
Because look at what has happened as a result of that. And in such a short space of time, because I heard what you said about when you qualified as a GP, kind of what's propelled you into this space now, using LinkedIn for just about a year.
Yeah.
And kind of what's happened to you. So I know one of the reasons why I wanted you to come and join us wasn't just because for your portfolio career, it was also about the Cura H Award. So great to hear a little bit more about that too.
So again, been doing some work in the health equity space, and I just used to go to different corporate events. Obviously, as a healthcare professional, we're going to these events, and I'll just see the communities that they have, the networks that they have, how they recognise the achievements of women within the corporate space. But there's nothing like that really for women in healthcare. So I've always felt like, you know, this will be so great to actually translate this to the healthcare field. And then from there, I became events director at Black Female Doctors in the UK and explained my idea. They were like, you know, that's great. We have something similar that we wanted to do. And then from there, we created the Cure Awards, which again was just representing all women of all different colours, different ethnicity, different backgrounds within healthcare, just really shining a light on all that they're doing. And then again, it was just it was an amazing event, I think it was. It happened on the 2nd of March. And it was just incredible just to have a room full of women who were just really supporting each other. I felt like there was just so much love in that room, the networks. It was just a great event. And I just hope that it's something that can continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, I had the privilege of attending as well. And yes, all what you say, and also what I really took away from the evening was the women, all the different women
in leadership doing incredible things. You wouldn't really know about. And then just seeing them all in one space and just talking to them even about their journeys as well, and just realising that their journeys echoed my journey or just giving me things to aspire to. Again, it was just really incredible.
Exactly that. And what I also love was the breadth. Yes. So there was a big focus on women's health.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
But seeing women working in different elements of healthcare, different research, parts of the healthcare pathways. And lots of people, and I'd never heard of Black Female Doctors UK before, and I was speaking to you about on the journey here, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Feels like to me that I don't see many younger Black women, female doctors and clinicians. And you said to me, there were loads, Monica. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I saw more of them at the Cure Awards, but actually we've had the conversation here so many times, you can't be what you can't see.
Yeah.
And whilst I think, yes, there's a challenge to that, you might be the first, but actually, even when you are the first or you're one of few, coming together and knowing that there are others who are working in the space as well, it's support for you, but it's also that inspiration, isn't it, for others. I felt very inspired in the room at the awards, but it was such a warm really warm atmosphere as well. I think I've been to awards before where it can feel a bit pretentious, and that wasn't the vibe here. No. So I'm really looking forward to next year. And also, I loved the date because it was right at the beginning of Women's Month, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so it was nice to kick the month.
Yes, yeah. So we were very intentional about that date.
Yeah.
And we also chose that date as well because we were thinking about Ramadan as well.
Yes.
Sort of to make sure that everyone could become and would be comfortable. So we had me thought about all of that in terms of picking that date.
Yeah, no, it's what I'm looking forward to next year.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So we've mentioned quite a few things that you're working on, particularly around, like you said, amplifying great work other women are doing, but also looking at the focus on tackling health inequalities for Black women and for Black people and women.
Yeah.
I just wanted to come to the point of, because I also heard what you said about being in the rooms where you can influence and drive change. And that's where you're heading to. That's where you are in and starting to break that ceiling a bit more.
Yeah.
But what, in your view, then should be done to increase diversity in senior leadership? What more do you think we should be doing?
So I think raising awareness about the roles, first of all, the opportunities. Again, a lot of the opportunities I feel like I've had to seek out myself to even find out about it. I guess I forgot to mention before that I've recently just become health governor for Kent Community NHS Trust.
Where shall we sit? That
just like, I want to be in a room where I actually get to make change in terms of like just even seeing my son just go through certain pathways in terms of like just development and just going for his checks as well. I'm like, okay, it's just, again, I just want to really just be aware and understand the system fully at all levels. So that's part of what drives me in terms of like going into or applying for these roles. So I think definitely awareness. I think also giving us training and equipping us with the skills and the knowledge in order for us to thrive in these roles. Because I think a lot of us, myself included, I apply for these roles, but I feel very much underskilled. Perhaps that, I don't know enough to be in these rooms. But if maybe there's some training just in terms of preparing you for leadership positions, I think that would be really helpful as well. I do know that there are lots of leadership academies within the NHS. But again, this is only things I found out recently within the last year and a bit as well. So again, just raising awareness so that we're aware that, okay, these are the pathways you can take if you want to go into leadership positions. So it's quite clear for anyone who wants to progress what they need to do.
You know, I think it's so good that you express that, because when you're looking through your own lens, so me being in the NHS for 20 years, been having a corporate career, it's a lot easier to access information, right?
Yeah.
we're usually desk-based. You can access information coming through emails, etc. And I always think about, what about our frontline colleagues? Yeah. What about our clinical colleagues? Especially like you, if you're in primary care, you know, like you're one step removed from some of that mainstream communication channel. How do you find out? What if you're not on socials? Do you know what I mean? So I think there's something about, yes, people being proactive, but also if you don't know where to look, you can't be proactive, can you? So I really hear that. And the other thing I've mentioned here before, and I'd want to bring up in connection to what you were just saying there about, you know, when you said, oh, I feel underskilled for some of the roles, I think what I love about what you've shared is, but you've brought what you've got.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
So yes, you may not be exposed to a boardroom before, but actually you're a clinician, you're representing and wanting to connect to the community that you live and work in.
Exactly.
You know, and you've got lived experience that connects to what you're passionate about.
Exactly.
That is invaluable. Yeah. And I call that out because I think there are many people out there who have that. But they may be thinking, but because I'm not so sure about
this course or diploma, or they don't go
put yourself forward. You know, I always say, put yourself forward. You'll soon find out if you have genuinely got something missing. You'll get clarity on what it is.
Exactly. Yeah. So definitely, I've lots of feedback, and then they told me, okay, maybe in like 1 or 2 years, you just need to do this, this, and this. And I'm like, okay, that's actually good for me to know. So I know what I can do to actually get to that maybe non-executive director role.
Yeah.
So again, it's just really important just to reach out. Get feedback, and then it teaches you where you need to go, where you need to get upskilled in.
Absolutely. And it's one of the main reasons why we have Bravery in the Boardroom, because actually just trying to get that information and knowledge sharing out as widely as possible. Yeah. And we've had the privilege of having some fantastic NHS execs and non-execs who have shared that. How do I get here?
Yeah.
What are you doing now to increase that representation? What are some of those key skills? So what are the key skills that you would advise people to have? But as I was saying to you before, I also know that our audience wants to hear from colleagues like yourself who are embarking on the journey now, not only from our colleagues who've been there and worn the T-shirt for a while.
Yeah.
Right? So I really appreciate you sharing that. So coming into that, so heard you and what's driven you, you are the change, you're being the change. Right, rather than admiring the problem, as you said. But what advice would you give to aspiring clinicians? So what's the specific advice you tease out, Julie, to give to aspiring clinicians from underrepresented groups who are feeling like you, I want to be the change, I'm sick of hearing the conversation and no action?
Yeah. So I think join different committees, follow different groups that you're interested in, different spaces, apply to be a trustee at different charities, just to get experience to that field, and also to understand how things again are working at board level. I think just by making those connections, following people, connecting people, going to networking events, it helps you just to get into that space. It helps you to understand the, I guess, frame of mind that you need to have in order to succeed in those areas. And then even from doing that, you can sort of get a mentor as well, just in terms of someone just to guide you and advise you in terms of how you can easily or more easily get to those roles. So that's what I would definitely advise. Joining committees, different societies, going to different events, and just networking.
Okay. And for you, what inspired you? So you touched on it a little bit about your experience, but if I go back a step, so let's go back to you becoming a GP and studying medicine. What inspired you to go into that career path in the first place? I'm intrigued.
No, I'm intrigued. I'm not just trying to remember, but so many years ago, the innocence I had back then. I think I just really wanted to help people, first of all. And then also I wanted to work at a community level where there was continuity of care. I thought that maybe secondary care was a bit too busy for me. I wanted someone where that felt like a family, sort of like where you know the receptionist, you know your tea. I know that can happen in hospitals as well. But then also I like the idea that I can follow up my patients as well. I can see mothers when they come in pregnant, like with a new baby, see as the child's progressing. I really do enjoy just that stability in terms of and that follow-on care. So that's part of what drove me, and what I was quite certain, even from when I first applied, I wanted to be a GP. I did explore a few other things, and also doing obs and gynae as well. But I did find that it was very busy, and also in terms of work-life balance, that was quite important for me. So that really directed me in terms of becoming a GP.
And you know, I really appreciate your honesty on that point, because I think sometimes I'm hearing a view that the NHS, you know, when you have a role in the NHS, you're always going to feel like you're doing three jobs in one. It's kind of how it is, right? However, and it can almost feel like sometimes it's a dirty word or phrase to say I want a work-life balance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And actually, we've got a burning platform in the NHS in terms of the workforce crisis. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a whole conversation about why are we not attracting talent more talent into healthcare. And I listen to what you're saying there and I think, well, there's talent out there who do want to come into healthcare and do want to have a career, but they just don't want to have to work round the clock, you know? And actually, who can really do their best work if they are constantly overworked and working round the clock? So yes, I understand why people are in that position because you haven't got enough people.
Yeah.
But actually, a lot of people are not going to want to sign up to that, even though they have the desire to work in healthcare.
Yeah.
And I'm not admiring the problem. I'm just calling out that actually those who have it within their power to look at this, you know, yes, your platform's burning, but if you've got people coming in through the door, you don't want that revolving door going back out in 6 or 12 months' time. You know, you want to retain that workforce. So thinking about what can we do to make it more manageable? What can we do to make it more enjoyable so that we keep the talent who, like you just described, I want to provide this care.
Yeah.
You know, I want to have that continuity. Yeah. It drives me, it keeps me, you know?
Yeah. As a mother now, it's very difficult in terms of just balancing it, even in terms of things like pregnancy. I don't think I could have managed the rota whilst pregnant. In terms of my difficult pregnancies, I think it would have been really difficult for me. And also even after giving birth and now having your child to look after, I definitely couldn't do full time. So, and that's something that many other mothers I've spoken to have also said, as well, people that are caring for their children, they said that it's really difficult to sustain. So I think that's a large problem in the NHS.
I hear that. And it, like you said, it's not something that you can solve overnight.
Yeah.
But it's that thinking, isn't it? What more could be done to help those roles be more flexible and more accommodating?
Yeah. I mean, they're trying in terms of making it easier for people to apply to be less than full time. But again, there's still a gap in the rota. So is that, what are they doing to fill this gap? Yeah.
So tell me, we skimmed over some of the roles that you spoke about.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd just like to understand them a little bit more. So you spoke about your, if I'm saying it right, two bits I want to pick up on. Your role on the EDI steering committee at the BMA, is that right?
Yeah, advisory group. Yeah.
Yeah, advisory group.
Yeah.
And also I wanted to speak about London Inspire and what you're doing there. So it'd be great for you to just share a little bit more about what those entail.
So with my role in the advisory group for the BMA, essentially just reviewing all their strategies and policies in terms of making the BMA more inclusive, more equitable and diverse and inclusive as well. So that's part of what I do in that role. We review different policies, any sort of issues you make me give comments on. I contribute to an article about for Black History Month as well. I'm just really highlighting all the work that, you know, Black women and Black people have contributed in terms of the NHS.
And I'm seeing that on
So, and then how we are, you know, we're the backbones of the NHS in terms of Black and ethnic minority people, how much we're doing. That's part of what I do there. And then for the London Inspire program, essentially we're trying to improve the quality of life and the quality of life of Black Londoners. So we're trying to raise awareness of different health conditions as well, also help with educating people and empowering people to actually advocate for themselves as well. So within that role, I did a Black Health Matters campaign for Black History Month. We also created the Black Health Inequality Summit as well, which happened. It was really successful. It was the first of its kind, where we essentially got different organisations together in London just to really share their experiences and what they're doing in terms of the grassroots work that they're doing in their different areas. And it was just an amazing event as well. Again, I think we just desperately needed a space where we can just share our experiences, share our knowledge, and just be supportive of one another's journey as well. And also to talk about some of the issues, also talk about some of the things that we've got going well and learn from each other.
Yeah.
So it was a great event. So that's what's just recently happened. We're hoping to continue that on. Mm-hmm. And then now we're just planning for the future of the organisation and what else we plan to do. But we're still doing lots of health events as well. So we've got one coming up later this month.
And so you've told us about Cura Awards.
Yeah.
You've told us about what's going on here.
Yeah.
Where can our listeners find out more? So of all the things you've told us about, where can our listeners find out?
So I guess I would say you can follow me on LinkedIn, because I post about all of it on my LinkedIn. You can also, yeah, you could put it in the show notes, yep, then people can just follow on and find out a bit more about those organisations.
Okay, and on LinkedIn, you're just Julie Hammond?
So yeah, Dr. Julie Hammond, and I think you should be able to find me.
Brilliant. No, and I'd never have guessed that you'd only been on LinkedIn for a year. I love seeing your posts. I think it's inspiring is a word we kind of use bandy about a lot, but I think in you unpacking with us today, kind of what you're working on, what drives you, how you've made it happen as well. Like you've said it so simply, but I genuinely think just having that bravery, like you said, to reach out, to ask, to connect, to put your hand on.
Yeah.
Really heard that from you about, and then saying yes, of course, to what comes through. But really heard that about, you know, if you've got an area or a passion that you want to see changing, actually step forward, have the conversation, bring your skills to the fore, and then be ready for when the door opens.
And
really,
something I mentioned as well, you can also go on Eventbrite as well. So anything you're interested in, just look for events and go to these events. And then from there, you can network with people also in that space.
Yeah. And these are things that nearly anybody could do.
Yes, anyone.
You know? Yeah. As I said, you make it sound simple because I genuinely think that first step.
Because it felt simple, if I'm being honest. I don't feel like I've done a lot in terms of how I even got to these positions. But I just think just being, I guess, in the right rooms with the right people at the right time, that's how all these things have happened. And then the way it's happened is just me putting myself out there.
Yes.
So I think anyone can do it. And I would say I'm quite introverted. Again, I've only been on LinkedIn for a year. Mm. But just by just reaching out to people, having those little connections, having those one-on-one meetings, even if you don't want to go to like big events, those have been so powerful in terms of, you know, propelling me forward to do these things.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I'd love to invite you back.
Oh, yeah, that'd be.
I think good. So. I think there's so much going on in your world. I think it would be lovely to have you back in most probably about 12 months' time and see what else is happening.
Yeah.
We absolutely will share the links on all what you have going on and so people can find out more. But final question from me, but I always ask, especially for you, because my goodness, you're doing so much.
Yeah.
What do you do to maintain balance and look after you?
I would say I definitely have moments of pause.
Mm-hmm.
So after a busy season, such as last month, I just have moments where I'm like, I don't plan anything to do anything extra. I just plan to obviously go to work and then come home and spend time with my family.
Yeah.
I think just having those moments just to relax. Because again, it can become overwhelming even when we have lots of events going on. I'm just like, oh my gosh, one thing after another, balancing different hats. It can be intense. Sometimes I struggle just to keep on top of all of it. And I do know that I need to seek help in terms of getting an assistant on board, probably to help me manage my diary to make things a bit easier.
Yeah.
But I think also just know when it's time and when it's okay to actually be like, yes, all these things are happening, but actually it's okay if I miss it. I'm just going to take a moment to myself and my family and just do, because again, with the pandemic, what I've learned so much and all of my experiences is that nothing matters more to me than my family.
Yeah.
So again, I'm making sure that I definitely put my family at the forefront of everything I'm doing. So even though I'm doing all these other things, essentially I'm doing it so that eventually I can spend less time working and actually spend more time at home with my family and maybe doing my work from home rather than having to go into the office. Yeah. So again, that's part of what's driving me as well.
Yeah. And you know, I love about speaking with you and listening with you today, Julie, is I see you really taking ownership of your career vision and where you want to go. And I think that's one of the key takeaways I hope listeners hear today about when you've made a decision, you're passionate about them, you want to drive that change, you can be the change. Take those first simple steps. Be brave to say yes when the doors do start to open. I also heard you literally just bat away if someone says no or the door's shut, just that away.
It happens so often that I'm just like, okay, I can't get up. Well, okay, realistically, I probably didn't get upset. Maybe, and I'm just 1 or 2 days just to be like, oh, that's sad. So a really powerful quote that I heard is that a no is a yes somewhere else. So even though you may be disappointed, which I definitely am sometimes, I allow myself to have 1 or 2 days just to really wallow in it. But then I actually go and explore what other opportunities are out there. And I think that's definitely what's, again, helps me just to continue the momentum. Because otherwise, it is quite easy just to, I guess, feel a bit upset about what's going on and to get disheartened. But you do need to just have that sort of, I lose the words, but just have that sort of drive just to continue going.
Yeah, I definitely, my goodness. What I've heard from you today, drive, determination, passion, but actually a hell of a lot of empathy. So what you were saying at the beginning about you as your leadership style, yeah. really heard that come through in what you shared, your vision to drive change for difference, but also, like you said, adaptability in spades in yeah. terms of all what you do, but yeah. really seeing and hearing the empathy of, you know, from what you experience using that to really want to galvanize change yeah. for others. And what my, one of my biggest takeaways from this conversation is how much you want to empower, you know, the person. Yeah. So hearing you talk about advocacy and what that really means and what that should look like and how helping people to be more informed, but also having confidence to be able to take ownership
yeah.
and control of their healthcare and what should be happening.
Yeah.
Really, really heard that come through. So thank you so much for your time today. And as I said, I think you'll be back with us next year.
I would love to be back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.